Good morning, everybody. It's 9 a.m., and I call this meeting of the Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee to order. Catherine, will you please take roll?
Thank you, Chair. Chair Escada?
Here.
Chair Downs? Vice Chair Downs?
Here.
Regent Bautista? Regent Brown?
In the other room.
Regent Del Carlo?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Chair.
So before beginning today, we'll take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, the Washo, the Numu, the Northern Paiute, the Nui, the Western Shoshone, and the Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize their honor, their stewardship, and that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Thank you all. So, for those who would like to call in and offer public comment today, please dial 669-444-9171. And enter meeting ID 961-6251-7764 and passcode 555-555. Is there any public comment here at UNLV? Seeing none. SCS, is there any public comment on the phone?
There are no public callers at this time.
Thank you. Then we're going to just transition quickly into agenda item number two, which are going to be the consent items. Now, these consent items will be considered together or acted upon in one motion unless an item would like to be removed to be considered separately by the committee. Are there any comments, questions regarding the agenda item number two?
I move to approve the consent items.
Move to approve by Regent Downs.
I'll second that.
Second by Regent Del Carlo. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Meeting passes. Agenda item passes. We're going to head on down to number three, if we could, please. Now, this is for possible action also, and these are program changes over at the College of Southern Nevada. The 3A and 3B. 3A is associate in business at College of Southern Nevada, and the second is criminal justice, also at the College of Southern Nevada. And these program changes are going to be somewhat minimal with a minus. It's going to take away one of the credits. However, if President, come on, oh, there he is. Go right ahead, sir.
Good morning, Chair Arascata. James McCoy, Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs at the College of Southern Nevada, for the record. And we appreciate this body taking these two items as a 3A and 3B, because Chair Arascata, you're absolutely right. These are very minimal changes, as you referenced. The first is a name change for the Associate of Business. Currently, let me give you a little bit of background on these two items and why these changes are before you today. From time to time, we have the opportunity to acknowledge the Department of Education when they come to our campus to do an audit between all of the systems, and those systems in this context would include things like the INSHE APIS. This is the global database for all things curriculum across the state for INSHE. It's tied to the institution's catalogs, in this case CSN's catalogs, and then what happens with the Northwest Commission in terms of accreditation and how that aligns with all of those systems. During that experience, we thought we ought to do a quick audit to make sure that indeed all of this alignment is happening, and as a result, we did find some things that weren't in alignment between what was recorded in the record of, the system of record with APIS and what is in our CSN catalogs. And two of those items today are these two items in front of you, the Associate of Business and the Criminal Justice Associate of Arts degree. And so we are simply trying to clean our garage a little bit. To use that analogy. For the Associate of Business, it's very simple. In our catalog, and as previously approved by the body, it was the Associate of Business degree, and that's how it's been operating for quite some time. In APIS, it just says business, and so our ask is to change that in APIS to make it official for spring 2026. The second thing that this will do, and some of you may remember this, there was a time probably about 6 or 7 years ago where the board reinforced the policy around associate degrees being 60 credits. And so the institutions across the state did just that, an audit, identified opportunities for reduction if they were exceeding 60 credits in so much as there wasn't a specialized accreditation requirement to exceed the 60. And this is exactly the case here. So back then we moved to move this degree, this business degree, from 61 to 60 credits, but it didn't end up in the APIS system. So we're asking for your official approval on that. Secondarily is the Associate of Arts in Criminal Justice, same scenario here, except for no name change, just a simple credit adjustment, same thing that had happened through this APIS audit, removing the total credits from 61 to 60 credits. So that's the best explanation I can give, and I'll stand for any questions and seek your approval.
Any questions from the board? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you so much. I just think this is the value of having an outside eyes and an audit, and I'm happy to see the students save a credit, and that's money, so and time.
That's right.
So it's well done.
Great. Thank you, Richard.
And with that, I'll make a motion for approval.
Thank you.
There's no other comments or questions.
Second.
We have a motion by Regent DiCarlo, seconded by Regent Brown. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. McCoy. This is another one of the program changes, and it's a slight change also, but it's going to be the program change for the Associate Arts in Architectural Design. And looks like we have a person from TMCC. Thank you. Please go ahead.
We do. Thank you. And good morning, Chair Escada, members of the ARSA committee. I'm Dr. Melissa Dedman. I'm our Interim Vice President of Academic Affairs for Truckee Meadows Community College, for the record. As mentioned, we are bringing forward a program change to our current Associate of Applied Science in Architecture and Construction, which we are now proposing as an AAS in Architectural Design. This change is accompanied by curriculum of revisions, and this is going to allow us to align with our Bachelor of Architecture program, which was approved by the Board of Regents in 2021, and for which we are seeking accreditation from the National Architectural Accreditation Board, or NAB. If we're successful in that venture, it would become the first fully accredited BARC program in the nation offered by a community college. So the proposed changes to our associate degree in seeking this alignment also help us get us closer to that goal. So the proposed changes to our associate degree remove the construction components of the curriculum. They introduce four new courses within the architecture, or AAE, prefix, the architecture and design, or AAD, prefixes. And these curriculum updates respond directly to recommendations made by that accrediting board, NAB, and also assure alignment with NAB's 8 program criteria and 6 student criteria for accreditation. There are no fiscal implications with this change, as those have already been accounted for in the BARC. And so with that, I will take any questions and seek your approval.
Are there any questions this morning? Hearing none, is there a motion on the table?
I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Second?
Second by Regent Brown.
Thank you, Regent Brown. First by Regent Downs, seconded by Regent Brown. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None? Thank you. That was very succinct. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
And big supporter for the BARC degree at TMCC. So thank you. We are going to be sliding over to agenda item number 5, and this is the NC Planning Report. Director of Policy, Tarina Caserta, will request approval of additions to the 2025-2029 Planning Report. Tarina, please continue.
Good morning, Chair Arascada, Committee. For the record, Tarina Caserto, Director of Policy. Item number 5 today is the 2025-29 Planning Report Additions. I'd like to provide some background on the Planning Report itself. Title 4, Chapter 14, Section 3 of the Board Handbook provides for a master plan. And on a biennial basis, each institution shall present for consideration to ARSA its plans for the new degree program, student services, and research activities for a planning period of 4 years on the ENSHE planning report. And as such, last year, in December 2024, the board approved that 2025-29 planning report. Now, the years between that biennial report, there's an opportunity for institutions to submit any academic additions to the report. And so before you is a list of academic programs that will be added to the 2025-29 report upon your approval. So I do request your approval of this 2025-2029 planning report edition.
Thank you, Tareen. Ms. Caserta, are there any questions regarding agenda number 5? Comments? None here. Well, hold on. I'll read it down. So one of the items I'd like to do, if we could please, Ms. Caserta, is slide on down to the documentation that and the reference material, in particular to the reference material of 5. And there's a few items I'd really like to highlight here, primarily because with the planning report, I believe that it's necessary to highlight a few of them, primarily because they're currently being formulated or have been formulated by ENSHE. And starting off with the Bachelor of Science in Sports Management at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, with the date of an implementation of 2026, I want to commend the University of Nevada, Las Vegas for looking into some of the soft funds, as stated in the reference material, to help support the operating costs. But hopefully the program can be handled by existing staff and faculty. I know that I'm going to be going through a lot of these folks because I think it's important that each campus needs to be highlighted about a very thoughtful foresight into the education and the primarily providing options and opportunities for each and every student to walk on our campus, step on our campus, roll on our campuses, and receive a top-notch education. So I'm going to be going through a few of these, and if you all want to follow along, let's do it all together. We're going to start off on page 5 with the University of Nevada, and specifically on page 5, in which the three new program proposals on this page are unquestionably highly sought after fields, especially in the state of Nevada. But this will also be the first of the FTEs of each of these three programs that will provide credence for these program proposals. Just on a side note, as I look over at Provost Thompson, I'm in full support of the doctorate in audiology. After finding such great difficulty scheduling an appointment with an audiologist, I think all of us have come into a roadblock trying to get a medical appointment here or there. But although the estimated cost has escalated in the funding, though, once again, Provost Thompson, the resources is not identified. And without those monetary resources fully being identified, in order to benefit the state of Nevada, hopefully the program will launch in 2030 is the projected model. Thank you, sir. And then continuing down on page 8, and I want to give a strong compliment over here to Nevada State University with the proposed new program of a Master's of Science in Library Science with the implementation of 2027 and the Master's of Science in Nursing Education Leadership. Now, once again, I will be in full support of both these programs, but it would need to exhibit a greater level of I would need to have a greater level of confidence following the identification of funding resources outside the state dollars. I'm not quite sure where it's all going to be coming from. Over to the College of Southern Nevada, they're proposing two new programs for implementation of fall of 2027. I see you're following with me over here, Regent Downs. I'm really intrigued by the Bachelor of Science in Quantitative Analysis, and I look forward to more information and the implementation. But the second proposal by CSN is the Associate of Science in Pre-Engineering. That one really struck me. because it's a pragmatic approach to prepare students for the seamless transfer into the four-year institute, which was very thoughtfully conducted, very thoughtful. And UNR and universities integrate and impress. Down on page 11, Great Basin College continues to provide the state of Nevada, especially in the rural communities, high level of medical workforce. And I say medical workforce because the first of is a Bachelor of Applied Sciences in Behavioral Health Wellness with an emphasis on implementation, And that's going to be implemented by 2026, fall of next year. I'd like to extend my appreciation to the senators that supported Senate Bill 165 and the $575,000 allocated to start this new bachelor program in behavioral health degree, especially with the start date of fall of 2026. So if there's any GBC representatives here today, thank you. Very, very well done. An additional shining example of GBC's thoughtfulness as being a conduit for Nevada's workforce is the proposed Bachelor of Science in Comprehensive Medical Imaging with an emphasis in cardiac and vascular sonography. My only chagrin for this program is the date of implementation is until fall of 2027. If it could start sooner, it would still skyrocket. But I would greatly look forward to the update, so thank you. And lastly, over on page 12, Truckee Meadows Community College identifies seven new programs with date of implementations running from anywhere of fall of 2026 all the way to 2029. But once again, another strong kudos to TMCC with the thoughtfulness of their new programs, the physical therapy assistant, that's big, the OT, the occupational assistant, occupational therapy assistant, and the surgical technology, construction management, digital humanities, associate of arts degree in engineering technology, and the bachelor of science in data science. So I want to just highlight each of those campuses. This is what we're here for. This is why we're doing it. I just want to say thank you to all of us having the foresight to know that higher education is not just one small runway. We have so many arterials we can go down. So thank you all. Yeah, please, Regent Brown.
Thank you so much, Regent Brown, for the record. What my colleague just outlined, I think I would just want to highlight the fact that these are all jobs of the future, and the fact that we're making these implementations now and we're making plans for it, I think that really just speaks to our system and how we aren't just resting on current degrees and current enrollment trajectories, but we're actually planning for the jobs of the future. So I just want to make sure that we recognize that, we highlight it, and say thank you for everyone in this room who I know does a tremendous amount of work behind the scenes to make sure that, you know, our students that are in high school now have a clear path forward and they have options for what they want to do with their lives. So just want to say a big thank you to everyone.
Well stated. Thank you. So as we review this, are there any more questions, comments, statements from the dais? May I make any options for
I'd like to make a motion to approve the NCHE planning report.
A second.
Thank you. First was from Regent Brown, second by Regent Downs. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? None opposed. Thank you very much, Ms. Caserta.
Thank you very much.
So we are going to move over to agenda item number 6, which is the new program review. And this is going to be done by the Academic and Transfer Policy Analysis, Dave Singleton. He will present this new program review report as required by board policy. So, Mr. Singleton, please.
So thank you, Chair Arascada, Vice Chair Downs, Regents. For the record, Dave Singleton, Academic and Transfer Policy Analyst, and I am here today to present agenda item number 6, the 2025 new program review. This is for information only, and as Regent Arascada said, it's an annual report required by board policy, Title IV, Chapter 14, And this report includes information about the new programs that were approved for implementation in fall 2024, fall 2022, and fall 2020. So if you look at the reference material, the first three pages are the estimates of headcount, full-time enrollment, and expenditures for each of the programs. And then you have the actual figures included. So for the programs that started last year, you have the information from just that year. For the programs that started in 22, you have the information from 24 and 22. And for those that started in 2020, you have all 3 years of information, both the estimates and then the actual. So that's part one of the report, which is kind of more of the quantitative portion. The rest of the report is qualitative in nature, and it's narratives. And it is the narratives come from the institutions directly, and it's sort of in response to the figures that you see on those first three pages. Hopefully the narratives provide a little bit of additional context for the numbers that you're seeing, and that can kind of help clarify what has happened, and in some cases what the institutions hope to happen in the future to possibly improve on some of those numbers. Representatives from all of the institutions are here if you have questions about specific programs included in the report.
Thank you, Mr. Singleton. I know I have a wealth of questions, but I'm going to leave it up. I'm going to open it up to the regents on the dais. Are there any questions, comments, statements, anybody for Mr. Singleton or the ARSA team? Everyone's getting the easy off today except for me. But so I do have a few questions from you, or for you, and actually for the representatives from each campus on here. That'd be wonderful to have. But first and foremost, I'd like to express great appreciation for the faculty members. I feel that what they're doing when this report proves it, but the faculty members, the LOAs, the staff campuses, the provosts involved to develop each program while preparing for the curriculum, and especially delivering on everyone's commitment. But we do have 25 minutes for this agenda item, and let's unpack some of these 27 pages. We're going to unpack a lot of them, and I'm going to do it in a chronological order, if we could, please. And I hope my fellow regents will give me a little bit of leeway and placate to me up here. But the new program review first-year follow-up on page 2, it highlights the attractiveness of the Nevada system of higher education. Because nearly all of the programs reviewed by Mr. Singleton and his team were on target, spot on with the headcount, the expenditure estimates, and with one exception of the industrial engineering at the University of Nevada, Reno. But however, the narrative from the University of Nevada on page 19, it identifies numerous issues that weren't found system-wide in regards to the recruitment of full-time faculty. And I saw Provost Thompson shaking his head. I mean, I don't have any concerns regarding this, especially with the UNR, with the university's engineering department, because unquestionably, you guys will remedy this situation. Thank you. With student headcount, especially. But I'd be remiss not to identify the Bachelor of Science degree of Applied Science at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. University of Nevada, Las Vegas estimated the first-year fall headcount for 2024 to be 200 students with total expenditures of $472,000. But unfortunately, the unduplicated headcount was 337 students, exceeding the prediction by 137 students. And with the first-year total expenditures about $13,000 below the estimated statement earlier, and that's extremely well done. You had 137 more students, but yet we're able to teach the degree with $13,000 less of an estimate. You want to jump on any of this, Jeff? Are you good? Let's move over to the third page, and this is the headcount estimates and the expenditure estimates. There were a variation in numbers leading to a great surprise on a few of them. But in particular with the third-year follow-up, the actual expenditures for the Bachelor of Architecture at Truckee Meadows Community College. And I know we just had a TMCC representative up here. But although the first year unduplicated headcount was 7 students, this enrollment increased by 16 students by the third year. But increasing the unduplicated headcount was the root cause of total expenditure increasing by fourfold. Going to the bottom of page 12 of 27 with the narrative, the BR degree encountered initial turbulence, which I really do appreciate that statement. But not unlike other highly attractive degrees that happen every new proposal program, just for an example, strong enrollment growth, the need for additional full-time faculty, part-time coordinator, attractive stipends. There's so many other items that contribute to the high expenses. But in my eyes, these are all good problems to have because I compliment the entire Bachelor of Arts degree, the faculty, the supportive administration, and everything you have going on with their President Alexander. So thank you. Okay. Also stated on page 3 of the third year follow-up is the course on computer science at the College of Southern Nevada. One of the items is the unduplicated headcount for the first year was 412 students. Now, Dr. McCoy, this is where it skyrocketed to the third year to over 1,000 students, which was in just 2 years. And even though the enrollment was doubled, the total expenditures were below the first year actuals. So this is a huge kudos to CSN. But I do have a follow-up question regarding the computer science numbers identified on the second and third cell of page 3. See, President Klippenstein, I'm going to go to you, Dr. McCoy. If you could please ask for a little background on the issue, what's going on, we're discussing.
Okay. May I provide, James McCoy, Executive Vice President for the record at CSN, a little bit of context. December, and I don't want to speak for all of my colleagues who are academic officers, but I think we all share similar sentiments in that the December ARSA meeting is one of our favorites because the Board of Regents and through this committee get to see the entire life cycle of academic preparation all the way through into program review. So just moments ago, you approved the planning report where we're projecting our academic programming all the way through, in some cases, 2030. In those inceptions that you just approved, we're contemplating what exactly we might expect in 4 or 5 or 6 years before an implementation even occurs, right? So there's some initial thought process into looking at labor market demand, looking at transferability in the context of a community college to a four-year university or college, looking at job openings, looking at whether or not 10 years later the same kind of data is going to hold true. So in the context of particularly your question, Chair Arascotta, related to computer science, our previous computer science degree was an Associate of Applied Science. It's a non-transferable degree, direct-to-workforce degree. The faculty made the astute observation that some students, we might say many, hundreds, thousand, thought, you know what, I don't want to pickle myself into a pathway that is only direct to workforce with no transferability pathway. And so the faculty put forward this Associate of Arts degree in Computer Science. You approved it a few years ago. This is year 3. And what we projected modestly might be a few students transitioning from the AAS to the AA so they have a transfer pathway as well, proved us wrong. Thousands told us in this community that they want to have a pathway that leads to greater prosperity and additional stackable credentials. So when we projected those numbers, we were way off. In this case, it was a good way off. And in this case, because the curriculum, the computer science specific curriculum, is attributed to both the AAS and the AA degree, the only thing that's really different here is a general education, we had the faculty standing by to teach it. Now, did it cost some more? Of course it did, because there's more seats, there's more filled seats, there's more students to educate. In this case, a pretty good round.
Thank you. Regent Downs.
So, an observation and a question. With the certificate of achievement, now wouldn't that lead right into the AA? So, I mean, wouldn't that be a nice path for students to take, or are they just not encouraged to go that way? So they could get that along the pathway. I mean, does it take them in much of a different direction, or is it, if you complete these 30 credits that are part of the 60 credits, then you get that as well.
Yeah, Regent Downs, Vice Chair Downs, thanks for that observation and the question. Indeed, it is a stackable certificate. A certificate of achievement stacks in beautifully into the AA. The challenge here, though, is when students have the broader picture of wanting to pursue the associate's degree for transfer, that's what they're going to declare. And so along the way, they're taking courses that are attributable to that 30-credit certificate of achievement degree, and they're not necessarily interested in grabbing that if they're going forward for the associate degree. So what we do, in fact, we noted in our narrative, we just started this practice, so I'm looking forward to year 5 on this program review in a couple of years, is that we are post-awarding the students COA when they've completed it, even though they didn't ask us to do it. So auto graduation, essentially, on those.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, is do they auto-award that or reverse-award that?
So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Perfect. Any other questions for Dr. McCoy? Thank you very much. So on that same page of that third-year follow-up, I'd also like to highlight some of the 7 cells of that third-year follow-up from Truckee Meadows Community College. Regarding the narrative on page 8 of this third-year follow-up describing the apprenticeship third year, looking over at you there, Dr. Alexander, did any of the labor unions participate with teaching or mentoring for any of those skills programs?
Excuse me, Chair Scott, I've been having technical issues here. What page are you on?
Right now I am on still page 3. Page 3 of the third-year follow-ups.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Page 3.
Let me see if I know. And right almost smack dab in the middle of it, you have Truckee Meadows Community College, where they have 7 cells, back to back to back to back. But on the narrative on the page 8 of those cells, for each of those, it describes the apprenticeship of the third-year follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Escada. Again, for the record, Interim Vice President of Academic Affairs, Melissa Dedman for Truckee Meadows Community College. Can you repeat the question, please, regarding the apprenticeship COA?
Sure. I was just curious if any of the labor unions participated with the teaching or providing any resources available for some of the mentoring or any of those programs.
For the Certificate of Achievement?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, the partnership that we have with the labor unions basically ensures that they do the teaching. So we structure the certificate as such that they're all a similar number of credits, technical credits that they take within their various labor union disciplines. They do the teaching, and then students declare the certificate of achievement as they continue to track on, and work towards their journeyman card in that particular field.
Are scholarships also provided by the labor unions?
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you.
They pay tuition.
They do. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Excellent. We're going to stick to that. Transition down to the 4th page, if we could, please. On the page 4, on the 5th cell down on the left-hand side of page 4 of the report, Nevada State University offering a human health science has not only maintained an ambitious unduplicated headcount for the first year through fifth year, the enrollment increased by 40%. But on the flip side, the fifth year total expenditures more than doubled in congruent with the complete enrollment. So NSU has a narrative on page 11 that reflects the reasoning for the offering of human health science. However, the course offering is displaying continuous uptake and an uptick with enrollment. And a representative from Nevada State University, just out of curiosity, what is the future approach to maintaining the high level of not just pedagogy but enrollment?
For the record, Tony Shinta, Executive Vice Provost at Nevada State University. So human health sciences was started a few years ago, and it has shown some growth in its own right, but it also is essentially the track that students are on if they want to enter the BSN program in nursing. And so a lot of the growth has stemmed from the fact that We have tremendous interest in our nursing program, and that's where the students start in human health sciences. And so there's plenty of resources that are invested into human health sciences, and I think, you know, that's – and there's plenty of interest that continues in human health sciences. So I think that's part of the reason why we would expect it to continue to have robust enrollments and support given the importance of that field.
Has there been any difficulty acquiring or attaining faculty?
I mean, for human health sciences in particular, I'm honestly not sure. I think for some of the, you know, the specific areas in physical and life sciences, it can be a challenge. Nursing, of course, is very competitive, and so that has been a challenge at times. We've been successful, but I know it hasn't been easy given what you're competing with in the nursing realm and other industry sectors. But we've done our best, and I think we've been able to maintain pretty high standards with faculty. And you see that in the NCLEX pass rates and, you know, some of those other arbiters of performance.
All good barometers, good measures of the level of education being received at each campus. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the question.
Two more highlights for us as we have 8 minutes remaining on this item. On the fourth page of the fifth-year follow-up, I have a question directed to UNLV regarding the PhD in psychology. Now, although the enrollment dropped by just two students from third year to fifth year, landing at 13 students, the fifth year actuals for expenditures increased from the third year to the fifth year by $328,000. But the narrative on page 18 states that this School of Psychology, a master's, is not a PhD. So there's two different items that aren't being properly identified or corresponding with each other. If I could have a UNLV representative, that'd be great.
Good morning, Regent Arascata, members of the board. Kate Corrigan, Acting Executive Vice President and Provost at UNLV.
Thank you, Ms. Corrigan.
I am trying to find the discrepancy that you're referring to. So on the spreadsheet,
On the fifth-year follow-up?
On the fifth-year follow-up.
Okay. So the question is directed for the PhD in psychology. The enrollment dropped by just two students.
The School of Psychology, correct? Uh-huh. Yes.
The PhD of Psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And then it landed at 13 students.
Yes.
That's for the fifth-year actuals. For expenditures increased from the third year to the fifth year by $328,000 with a decrease in students, but the fifth year increased by $328,000. But then going down to the narrative on page 18.
That's the discrepancy, correct.
Yeah. Correct. Then going down to the narrative on page 18. Oops.
Page. I think we have a typo.
Okay.
I think it's as simple as that, although I am embarrassed by that, so I apologize. But I think that it's a simple typo between the two programs. So you're looking at page, the UNLV section for fifth year is page 14, I believe.
It says, yeah, page 14.
Yeah.
Top left of my screen, it says page 18, but yes, 14.
Okay, all right. I wanted to make sure we're on the same page. So on 14, we have the MS, School of Psychology. So it's a simple typo, I believe, between PhD and MS, so I apologize for that.
Not a problem. That was just where when I saw the Master of Science, not the PhD, that's where my question came.
Yes, it should be PhD.
Okay, thank you. If we just make that for note.
We will make that change and resubmit. Perfect.
And my last item, as we have just 5 minutes and 11 seconds remaining, on the fourth page of the report, Western Nevada College needs, I feel that you all need to be highlighted in a most positive manner, because with the pragmatic approach to the health science of the associate's degree of applied science, the thoughtfulness and the thoughtful customary overhead calculations of 36% to account for the indirect program support which secured as the longevity of the program as it increases in popularity. But I just want to give strong thumbs up to Western Nevada College for that very thoughtful 36% of a calculation. That was very right done. Good job. The intentionality is for the betterment of the campus, for the college, and for that degree. All right, I'm going to stop talking. Are there any other questions, comments from anybody up on the dais? None stated. And this is for an information-only item. So I do thank you, Mr. Singleton. Very well done, and thank you for everybody for answering all my questions. So we are going to move over to agenda item number seven. Now, thank you, Ms. Caserta. So first and foremost, I need to give credit where credit is due, and that lies upon the heavy shoulders and the significant typing skills of the Director of Policy, Tarina Caserta. So thank you. The 207 or 209-page beast that you provided us, those are my 209 reasons why the strong compliment must be extended to you, and I greatly appreciate it. Although not that 209 pages, thought it was going to be a little bit longer. But the existing policy review was beautifully executed, and I want to extend my gratitude, and I'm sure everybody up on this dais feels the same way. The level of detail that you focused on throughout this entire 209-page document is greatly appreciated. So thank you. So with that said, let's hear from you, Tarina, please.
Thank you for that compliment. And I really have to thank all of my colleagues across the institutions for providing all that information and their reports this year. For the record, Tarina Caserto, Director of Policy. This item, number 7 on the agenda, is for information only. And as Dr. McCoy said just 20 minutes ago, December is our favorite meeting. I usually say that also. And that's because, and as you look at the lineup of the agenda, it is very carefully crafted today. First, you looked at programs coming in for approval. And then we took a look at the planning report, which is that wish list of programs that we would hope to see in the future. And then we had Dave Singleton bring us the 1-3-5-year review of those that have been approved recently. And now we are looking at the existing program review. And the existing program review meets board policy, Title 4, Chapter 14, Section 6. Chapter 14, one of our favorite sections of your handbook, in that the teaching institutions must review existing academic programs at least every 10 years. And so that's what you see before you in that 209-page document, were those programs that were identified as ready to be reviewed. And those reviews are done institutionally over the last year with their subject matter experts at the institution, as well as sometimes external reviewers. This report ensures the academic quality and helps determine if the need, student demand, and available resources support the continuation of a program. It's that deep dive to see where are we, where are we going with this. The institutions in their reviews are looking at not only the description of the program, they are providing us in these summaries the process and the criteria in which they review the program, the major findings and conclusion, and the next steps. So what we have before us in that 209-page document, it's comprised of several elements. The first actually is a table of a review of just this last academic year, all of the new programs that were approved and all those that were eliminated or deactivated. Then there's a second table that's a summary of the characteristics of all those program reviews that were done in the last academic year. And then the last section of that report are the summary of each of those program reviews, several pages long, each of them. So if you have any questions regarding those program reviews, I would defer to the respective institution to answer. And then after that, we will call up our colleagues from Nevada State University and WNC to actually give us a presentation of what that review looks like.
No questions seen? No questions heard? Let's go over to, so ARSA agenda reference material 7A. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Very well done. Now, will you please go ahead and give me those page numbers one more time in regards to the chart that you were referring to?
Oh, sure. So the first table I referred to was the review of all programs that were approved or eliminated this last year. That is going to be on page 8.
Yep.
And then the summary of characteristics of programs reviewed starts on page 11.
Yep.
And then for each one of those programs listed in that table, you will find the full summary in the remainder of the report.
Perfect. Thank you.
I have a comment.
Please, Rita DiCarlo.
I'm having technical difficulties. Thank you for the reports, and I agree. I love this process. I really do. And this is a like living, breathing. Things die, like the programs that you're going to eliminate. Things get born, like the new. And I think it's great because what we're doing reflects all of our institutions and the knowledge, and it keeps up with current society and what's relevant and what's not relevant. I mean, Regent Brown said, you know, this is our workforce. And I know you have a very dedicated staff. I'm looking at Renee. I know she's on your staff. And you guys do an amazing job with all this. And this is vital. This is the core of what we do. You know, we've got business things across the hall, but this is the heart and soul of being in higher education. So these reports aren't to be taken lightly. These are our roadmaps. You plan the work and work the plan, and you do this so well. And that's probably why there's not a whole lot of questions, because you do it so well, and you do meet frequently with your academic officers. I do know that.
Yes, we do.
So there's no surprises come December, and that's probably why you love the report too, because if you came here every December and we were throwing darts at you, it wouldn't be fun. But this is your favorite time, as Vice President McCoy said, because this is a year's worth of work, and then it's the reward, really. The accolades that the chair gave to you and this report and your team is well-deserved. You guys do a great job. I want you to know that. I mean, sometimes we just focus on students, 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 but this is about students, 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 nothing else. This is for them and why we're here. So I thank you so much for all the academic officers and their teams in this room. I just give you my heartfelt thanks. And, you know, it's the end of the year. We're going into the holidays, and come January 1st, it all resets. So well done this year, everyone. Thank you.
Very well stated. Thank you, Regent DiCarlo. So this existing program review is for information only. However, we're going to start off with the criminal justice program review from Nevada State University. Nevada State University has provided us with approximately 22 slides that we're going to be going over, with questions and answers that we can. Here we go. That we can present. That we can provide to the presenter. So please go ahead, Ms. Crisoto.
Thank you. The first presentation is from Nevada State University, Executive Vice Provost Tony Shinta.
Okay, for the record, Tony Shinta, Executive Vice Provost at Nevada State University. I'm here to talk about a criminal justice program review, pinch hitting to some extent for Dr. Gwen Sharp, our interim provost, who's actually up in sunny Seattle right now for an accreditation meeting. I could almost assure you that it's raining on her as we speak. So the one thing I want to say, it is 22 slides. That number sounds a lot bigger when you say it than when we were putting this together. So I'm going to try to move quickly through this process. I think it's the only humane way to do it. But of course, at any point, if I'm going too fast, feel free to stop me and slow me down, ask questions, or whatever you need to do. Okay, so first thing is getting this to... Are we tested this? Or is it just not on?
Oh, but it's not lit up.
And thank you for your time. That was the presentation. Sorry. We tested it, too. You, if you need to advance it, I can just tell you. I didn't break it, I swear.
There we go. There we go. Now we're going.
It is not this little device's day, I'll just say. So improving programs, obviously, is the cornerstone of a program review process. That's why you do it. But one of the things we've recognized over the years is that to really get the most out of it, we have to improve the improvement process, something I've referred to affectionately in the past as inception. You've seen it, dream within a dream? No? Okay. Well, it's improving within improvement. And so that's been one of our major emphases in recent years, is trying to improve the process itself so we can get the most out of it. And some of the things that have gone into that, we've done a better job of standardizing our data reports from institutional effectiveness. The enhanced support from the director of assessment is a big deal. The last time I gave this presentation, we didn't get any support at all from the director of assessment, but that's because we couldn't afford a director of assessment. Now we can. She's amazing. It's amazing to have that level of support, and we can do new things. And also, we've put more of an emphasis on a more robust external reviewer component than we had in the past. Our faculty do a tremendous job of giving us insights into the program, but there's also no real substitute for having an external arbiter from a different perspective giving you feedback on your program and what it's doing. So this is the circle of life. No, this circle of life is, that's Lion King. This is the circle of continuous improvement. So this is how the whole thing works. Basically, it's very much a thermostat kind of model, right? With a thermostat, you set your goal, a particular temperature you want to reach. You collect your data and you assess how well you've come close to achieving that goal. You make adjustments accordingly. If you're not at the temperature you want, you measure again and you continue that process until you get the temperature to where you want it to be. Same kind of deal, except instead of a temperature, what we're doing in this instance is we're establishing the learning outcomes, the things that are most important for students to learn. Then we're collecting information on those learning outcomes and how close we're coming to achieving them with our students. Then based on that feedback, we're making adjustments to get closer to the goal. We're moving closer to the goal and assessing again. And through that continuous process, ideally you get closer to the students being where you want them to be in terms of their mastery of the learning outcome. And that's how it works. So core elements, as many I'm sure do, we subscribe to the notion that there is no one perfect metric. Right? They all have their strengths and they all have their shortcomings. And so the idea is to take a multimodal approach where the strengths of one metric can often compensate for the shortcomings of another and vice versa. And so you'll have the very robust, huge data points of institutional effectiveness, which cover a lot of ground. And those are complemented by the richer information you can get from qualitative feedback. You put them both together and you have a fuller picture of what's going on with the program than you otherwise would. So when it comes to those institutional effectiveness metrics, we're insanely spoiled with our IE office. They're so talented. They're amazing. It's the closest thing I've got to having, like, one of those lamps that you rub it and then, like, magical things happen. Like, whatever we want, it just – we can get it. And so if it's in the student information system, not only do we have access to it, but we could disaggregate it any which way, and we could even have a dashboard that shows us how these different things interact that we can manipulate in real time. These are some of the vital signs, as I call them, for program review that go into our assessment of the program. And then, of course – as I noted a little bit earlier, a review of the curriculum, both in terms of the learning outcomes and just like what we're trying to convey and how we're conveying it to students is an integral part of this, but also looking at that curriculum in the context of a bigger picture, both in relation to other programs at Nevada State University, but also other programs that exist within the system and even with our peer institutions that we've established with our accrediting body. And then to the best of our ability, we want to look at alumni outcomes. How are students faring after they graduate from the program? So as we noted a little bit earlier, for today's look, we're getting the spotlights on our Bachelor of Arts in Criminal Justice. This one showed, like, by our standards, pretty explosive growth from zero to over 200 students when it first launched. The demographic composition of it is largely reminiscent of what we see for Nevada State University as a whole in terms of the composition. And taking a closer look at that enrollment, you can see it started from zero, I think it was 2012 when we launched this, and quickly ascended to about 239 students. There was a little bit of a dip there, and that's not entirely a waning interest in the program. It's really a combination of two factors. One is we did bring in fewer students during the pandemic and that post-pandemic era. That was just the reality we were dealing with. But we also did our jobs, I think, in that we were graduating more students than ever before. But you put those two things together, bringing in fewer students, graduating more than ever before, and you see this decline in enrollment. Graduation numbers still remain high, but we are bringing in more students. And in fall 25, even though it's not directly on here, we're once again back above 200 students for the criminal justice program, which is a pretty healthy size for an institution like Nevada State University. Going back again to the demographic composition, again, this really resembles or mirrors what we see for Nevada State University as a whole, with one caveat being that the percentage of underrepresented students actually is a little bit higher in the criminal justice program than it is for Nevada State University as a whole, particularly for Hispanic and African-American students. All right, moving on to one of my favorite topics, student retention. So in this case, we're looking at one-year retention of first-time, full-time students. So are the first-time, full-time cohort, are they retained from one fall to the next? And we want to give the Nevada State University retention some context. So here it is for give the program level data some context. We'll look at the university data first. And what we see here is we have a nice steady upward trajectory in our retention rates, going from 69% when this program review period started to 79%, and I think even now above 80% for overall institutional retention rates. And I think this is a function largely of the many things we've done during this time to promote student success. I mean, you go back to 2014, I'll allude to the Writing Center a bit because it's helped actually advance this program. We didn't have a Writing Center before 2014. And so we've been implementing things that are designed to elevate student outcomes, and I think you see that in the numbers and these increases in success rates. Now, when I put up the criminal justice numbers, you might wonder, like, oh, goodness gracious, what is going on with those metrics? Because they're all over the map. And the thing here, I'll assure you, and I think the next slide I'll give it a little more context, for first-time, full-time, for a program that's starting and growing, the sample sizes are very small. And so when you have very small sample sizes, you can get fluctuations like this. Even if you're not doing something dramatically different, they're going to be all over the map. So there's I can't see it because I'm too old and my glasses aren't good enough. I turned 50 in 12 days, so it's just falling apart. Like, it's all going down. Oh, sorry. If anyone's beyond that, hey, you all look great. So there's one that's 68% somewhere up there when I looked at it. That's 9 of 12 students. So you have two additional students, and suddenly it looks like above 80% retention rate. And so it's just hard to judge when you have these small sample sizes and draw conclusions. So a better thing we can do, which we did here, is rather than just looking at first-time, full-time, we look at all students. And so when you do that, it looks at any criminal justice students, and the yellow line here is any Nevada State student, you get a clearer, more consistent picture because you're looking at a whole population. And I can't see it, but I think I remember for Nevada State as a whole, when you look at all students, and persistence is basically the good stuff that happens fall to fall. It is, were they retained or did they graduate? Did one of those good things happen? And then it counts towards this percentage. And so Nevada State as a whole has gone, I think, from 68% to 82%, so a nice steady increase. And criminal justice actually has gone from 69% to 86% for this metric. Again, a nice upward trend over time, and I think a better picture of what's happening with the program than that smaller sample size where it's jumping all over the place. Okay, as noted previously, graduation numbers, like raw numbers of students who are graduating pretty soon, it does continue to climb. It has bounced around a little bit, but by and large, we've seen the trajectory going in the right direction. We've had some historically high classes of graduates or large classes in the last couple years. And, you know, that's due to increasing enrollments and then also increasing graduation rates. So when you go through the different categories or populations of students, you see first-time, full-time Nevada State University. We see generally nice double-digit increases in graduation rates. We're not at the finish line yet of, like, where we necessarily want to be, but what we focus on is doing things better and seeing it trend in an upward direction, which is what we can take solace in. When you look at that same metric for criminal justice, you see an upward increase as well. When you look at all students for Nevada State University, again, upward increase in graduation rates. And all criminal justice students, you see an upward increase in graduation rates. So it's trending in the – sorry, my watch was calling me – trending in the right direction, as you can see with this upward slope here. And, of course, our goal is to maintain that and keep pushing it up and up further and get more of the students out and benefiting from a better career path. And, of course, given our mission, it's important for us to look at some of the specific populations that I think we were designed to serve. So you look at first-generation students, and, again, very small sample size in the beginning. It does bounce around a bit. But the thing that I think matters here is for our first-generation students, and I think this is largely because of how the institution was designed from the ground up to serve this population, their graduation rates are equivalent to or even higher in many cases than the student population as a whole. Nationally, you sometimes see that go in the other direction. We want everyone to succeed, but it's nice to see that population of students who may not have someone in the family to turn to understand college are still succeeding at a high rate, and we see that for both the criminal justice program and Nevada State University as a whole. For underrepresented students, again, the sample sizes are pretty small, so we present this for Hispanic students where they do have a larger population. And again, you can see there's some movement up and down, but generally speaking, the graduation rates are quite high. We don't see a deficit, quite high relative to the regular graduation rates for Nevada State University as a whole. And there it is in relation. And so generally speaking, we see this going in the right direction. Okay, all right, so heading down the home stretch, obviously a really important part of program review is a direct assessment of your learning outcomes, right? Like, are students learning what we've set out for them to achieve? In this particular cycle, where we started is you pick a learning outcome, in this case demonstrating knowledge of the structure and function of the U.S. criminal justice system. Then you establish a rubric. It's a little more sophisticated than what we put up here for the purpose of the slide, but your rubric evaluates students on a 4-point scale ranging from emerging to exemplary, and then mostly in conjunction with kind of different expectations like those of our accrediting body, you establish a target of where you want to get. So in this particular case, it's we want 70% of the students to show proficient mastery of the learning outcomes or better. In this particular cycle, using a process where faculty independently rate student assignments, blind student assignments, where you can't actually know who was on the assignment or who did it, they're de-individuated, we fell just below that target, just under 70% of students showed proficiency in their mastery of the learning outcome. And, of course, the big part of this is there's a lot that goes into it beyond a little table up here on a slide. So there's a close assessment of, like, what's working well and what's not working well. And when you see what's not working as well, in this case, the faculty recognize that written work could be improved, then you'd say, okay, well, what do we do about that, right? That's the thermostat model. The written work isn't there. So in this particular case, the faculty have really done a tremendous job of partnering up with other areas of the college. So in this case, they created a tighter integration with our writing center and our writing specialists to ensure that students were much more likely to be using the center and getting the support that they need. And as a consequence, they did see that writing performance went up in these classes in a subsequent review. Regarding strategic plan goals, I think the program also has done a fine job of trying to meet those goals. One of the things they've done, it's been one of the first programs that actually has gone and created a fully online pathway. So they have a pathway where you can do it in person and hybrid, but they also have a pathway where you can do it entirely online, which does fit our student population, which often have a lot of other life obligations that they're attending to. And so they've done that. They've also tried to address the need for more experiential learning. And so they've done that both in the classroom with how they teach the subject matter, but they've also done a really nice job of creating a pretty expansive internship program. And I think to date, they've had 153 students actually go through the internship program, which is, internships are a lot of work. It's a tremendous experience for the students in terms of a real-world environment, but it's a lot. So I think kudos to them for taking that measure to establish a program this rich for our student population. So finally, getting to those external review highlights that I spoke about recently, we did have an associate professor from one of our selected peer institutions do a thorough review of the program in accordance with a report template. They offered up some strengths that they saw in the program with resonate with some of the things we've seen, like the flexible pathways where students have different options to get to degree completion and the extent to which we've been able to actually make adjustments based on the feedback from program review to make the program stronger and improve student performance. And that external reviewer also identified some areas for improvement and in really helpful ways where they're recognizing, hey, this is a growing sector of industry or of the market. You might want to strengthen the ability or the extent to which you address student learning in these areas to better prepare them for these outcomes and for these possible career paths and heavier emphasis on research-focused opportunities in relation to what we've already created. And then finally, from our own standpoint, this is overall from the perspective of faculty and deans. They identified four areas of improvement that they want to focus on. The first one is really important because if you could streamline the complexity of the degree and your course offerings, you could actually greatly facilitate the likelihood that students are going to make it to the finish line. One of the common challenges, maybe the most common challenge outside of financial concerns that I think we face, is students saying whether they can get the courses they need when they need them. And that's a challenge when you're a smaller institution, honestly. It's not one that we scoff at. It's very important to us. But you can do a better job of where you put courses, but you could also streamline the complexity of the curriculum, and that can help you get towards the same goal of making sure the students have a steady pathway of courses that take to get to graduation. Increased coverage by tenure-track faculty. It's spot on. I think almost every program, that's going to be a conclusion, is you need more tenure-track faculty. We've made some progress in the right direction. It can be a bit of a challenge because, funding comes from growth. So you want to get more funding for more faculty, you grow, but then by virtue of growing, you need more faculty than you started with. So you do make progress, but it's a little, have you ever gone up like the wrong way on an escalator? Like walk up the down escalator? It's a little like that. You can make progress, but it's a little harder and slower than it otherwise should be, but it's an important thing for us to do. And the last one is a big deal for us as well, is further strengthening our ability to connect with alumni and not only see where they are and how they're doing with the program, but also provide additional support and learn from their experiences to inform our future students. And that's it. Okay, that was 22. That's a lot, but questions?
Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair Arascata. So I was curious about your external reviewer. You may have mentioned it. Who did you have as your external reviewer for this program review?
One of the Indiana State Universities. I know it was an associate professor in criminal justice. I don't remember the exact name.
That's okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
But someone who's at the associate professor level, so pretty seasoned with some experience in this field, but also at an identified peer institution. So an institution that was, that we carefully selected that matched us in terms of characteristics, but was also aspirational in nature.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Vice Chair Jones. Just a quick question. The slide, the second to the last slide, you mentioned about streamlining degree programs. What would be the best process to streamline a program? Expand on that one.
So I think, the learning outcomes should be paramount. So you don't want to streamline in a way where you're sacrificing what is most important for the students to learn. But if you have a situation, let's say you have a capacity institutionally to offer three sections of a course in a given semester where you're going to meet enrollment. If students have, let's say, 10 different options in the curriculum in a more complex situation, Then they might get one of three of the options, and they don't get seven of the options. They can't even consider it. Whereas if there were two options to choose from, a simpler model, I'm not saying it should be that dramatic, but if there are two options, then you have two sections, maybe a night and evening, and another section, another. So it gives them more chances to get the course they need if you streamline it. As far as the process goes, I mean, I think it should be a very heavily faculty-driven endeavor where you're getting their input and their expertise on how we could make this a simpler curriculum while still retaining the most essential things that students want to know. I don't know if that is that too vague, or do you want to get down to brass tacks a little further?
No, I just by streamlining, when I hear the word streamlining a degree, it seems like it's putting an additional burden upon the shoulders of the student, regardless if the student has a full-time job, they're currently working, then they're going to be streamlining, so they're going to be putting three classes on top of one class. Just want to make sure the students have the capability of finding the success they need, but yet not burning the candle at both ends where the wick extinguishes.
Yeah, no, and that's a great question. It's a great consideration, but I genuinely think it's actually the opposite. It's designed so that instead of the students having too many different courses to choose from, you streamline it so they actually have more times of day and more days of the week to choose from a smaller array of required courses. So ideally, it'll actually give them more options for progress as opposed to being held back by too complex of a curriculum where there are too many different options that we can't even offer enough sections of. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, it's a thoughtful intentionality, yeah, in which you want to make sure that the student has an opportunity.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree.
Thank you. Any other questions for NSU? Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tony.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Next up, we will have Ms. Caserto. I'll let you take this one.
Tarina Caserto, for the record. The second presentation existing program review is with WNC. So I'd like to introduce WNC Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs, Dr. Dana Ryan.
Good morning.
Morning, Dr. Ryan.
Dana Ryan, Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs, Western Nevada College, for the record. We are really excited today to be able to present our recent program review for computer information technology. This program is an emphasis of our AAS technology degree, and our faculty member, Amy Glary, will present today on our behalf. Before she starts, I just want to say a little bit about Amy so that you sort of know how we have gotten here. Amy has led the program assessment efforts at Western for a long time. But most recently, she got real excited about doing a redesign on program review so that we could ensure it is an effective, meaningful process for our faculty and our students. So this format that you're going to see today fully engages stakeholders, accurately reflects our program impacts, and helps us identify actionable opportunities to most effectively meet student and community needs. Amy has done an amazing job, and we are grateful for her transformative work on this process, and really, she's very eager to share this with you today. So I will pass it to her. Amy, are you there?
I am.
Awesome. Okay. All you.
Do we have slides?
Slides are up. Just tell me the first
slides
slide
are up.
So you just tell me when to go forward. I'm not sure I know how to do that, but I'll do my best.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you, everyone. As Dr. Ryan said, I am very excited about this process, and I know you were slammed today, so I'm just going to get into it. This is about our computer information technology program from 2019 to 2024. Dana, if you could advance the slide, please. Okay. So we have been There we are. We have been working to modify this program review process for many, many years. I have been doing this since 2018 for us, and the real opportunity to be able to do this came forward when President Dalpe finally stepped into his role. Like most institutions, we review all of your core metrics. We have enrollment, graduation rates, retention, persistence, detailed demographics forever. We added ROIs, all of that to it. but we've been able to expand the process to include additional measures that really reflect who our WNC students are. Our student population is distinct. Many are lifelong learners who engage with the college well beyond a single degree path. The early findings from the CIT review really underscored this reality. It reinforced the need to evaluate not only how students perform within the individual programs, but how they are moving through WNC more broadly. We also decided to include virtually every administrative department on campus. So we are contacting advising, financial aid, continuing education. After the automotive review, now we're talking to facilities. We talk to everybody. So everybody on campus has a part and a say in each of our program review processes. One major shift in the program review process is our approach to recommendations. This is one of the things that seems to have received very, very positive feedback. Under the old system, we recommendations were documented at the end of the review, but they lost momentum once the report was finished. Now recommended changes such as curricular revisions are implemented during the review process itself. So they go through the curriculum committee, any required ENSHE processes, such as ARSA, before the review is completed. By the time the review reaches college council, everything is already done. Everything is finalized, decisions have been made, paperwork has been filed. There's no lingering follow-up. And this has really increased participation because faculty and staff see the value and the immediate impact of the process in real time. We've also changed how the reviews are facilitated. Rather than relying exclusively on faculty volunteers to complete the entire review process independently, President Delpy has provided resources for me, thank you so much, Dr. Delpy, to support each review from start to finish. Faculty still lead all of the academic and disciplinary components to it. But the administrative burden has been lifted. That has really improved engagement in the process as well. This model ensures a consistent, high-quality process. We aren't reinventing the wheel each time or building a new template each cycle. Next slide, please. The AAS technology degree was instituted in 2013 to function as a collection of awards for our low yield technology program. So this is one of six within that program. And the mission for it is really for the entire degree itself. The mission for the Associate of Applied Science and Technology is to provide employment-related knowledge and skills necessary to succeed as a professional in a chosen field of study. So not a transfer degree, and really encompasses all six of these programs within the AAS technology. Prior to this program review, it was not specific to each program. So that's something that came through the program review process as well. For our CIT program, we have one associate's degree, one certificate of achievement, and 10 skills certificates. So it really is a very broad program. Prior to the review, we had a series of program outcomes, but again, those were all for the AAS technology degree as a whole. And I am going to talk more about how we modified that through this program review process in just a minute. Next slide, please. So as you can see, this is very much a low yield program for award completion. We expected that. We don't really anticipate that to change anytime soon because of the nature of what this program is. Despite the low numbers of graduates in CIT each year, our course level enrollment remains high. It actually resulted in the recommendation that we hire a second full-time faculty member for this program. As a result of that, now we are able to offer all of the core courses each semester. So I'm really excited in 5 years to look at this data again and see what graduation rate modifications might happen due to those scheduling changes. Some other things that came out of this kind of numerically, we are looking at things like everyone wants to look at time to degree, right? That's great, but we realize that many of our students actually declare a particular award really close to or even the same day that they apply for graduation. It's amazing when you have an average, you know, 6 month time to degree for a program. So we started looking at this in a more detailed way. How long does it really take a student to complete? What are the metrics for that? So we are comparing the when they declared versus when they graduated to their first enrolled semester at WNC, and also to the first date that they took a class within a particular program. So I feel like we're getting a more complete picture of what our students are actually doing as a result of that. My favorite slide is next. Okay, so this is a very cumbersome chart. Bear with me on this, but it shows the degrees earned by students who graduated with an award in CIT from 2019 through 2024. So there are 50 individuals who earned a certificate of achievement or an AAS at that time, but they earned 200 awards from us in total, beginning in 1977. That student actually earned her first award in AGS with us in 1977. She earned another degree somewhere in the middle and now is completing a program in CIT over this five-year period of time. I thought that was a very cool story and is very representative of who our students actually are. Our students come to WNC. They don't come to WNC for just one degree and move on. They stay with us. They continue their education over decades. The other benefit we derive from this information is students often add on a CIT award, even if they are predominantly enrolled in or pursuing a different degree path. So you can see on the left, you have an AA and AGS, often transfer degrees, but they see the value in including CIT skills in their educational repertoire. As a result of this little nugget of information, we were able to pull a list of students who had just one or two classes shy of a particular degree, and we let them know, hey, you know, you're so close to getting a skills certificate in cyber technology or whatever it happens to be. So I'm also interested in seeing if that modifies our graduation rates moving forward. And the next slide, please. We have learned a ton from this process. One of the things that we learned is it would be very helpful to track skills certificates. We don't currently have a mechanism for students to declare a skills certificate, but it is very clear that many of our students come to WNC for a skills certificate without the intent of pursuing other degrees, and CIT is a great example of that. You don't necessarily need an associate's degree or a transfer degree in this particular program in order to gain employment. So that's what we're seeing a lot of our students doing. We altered our assessment plan as a result of this as well. I mentioned outcomes a couple of slides ago as kind of generic for the entire AAS technology, and we worked with program faculty to create degree level outcomes that are specific to each award. They provided a specific assessment process for each one, what assignment in what class is going to be used to determine if students have met this outcome. And that set us up to provide a five-year assessment plan for each of our programs. And the last thing, we hired Tony, hallelujah. Now we again can provide those course level offerings for students. For varied program level needs, kind of dependent on whatever their program needs are, we are able to provide a much broader scheduling approach to that. Can I answer any questions for anyone?
Vice Chair Downs.
Thank you, Chair Escada. I had a couple of questions, Professor Galeri. Did you have an outside reviewer for this?
We did not use a direct outside reviewer. We relied on an advisory board within the program, a discussion with adjunct faculty. I was invited to all of these meetings. I really appreciate program faculty for including me in all of this. And again, our internal administrative departments were very integral in the process as well. So no direct outside reviewer in the way that we used to do it.
Okay, thank you. Another question on slide 4. You may have said it, I just missed it. The CT, what does that represent?
That's the Certificate of Achievement.
Okay. And is one of the challenges that students get some training and then they get picked up in industry? Is that why they're not sticking around to complete a, okay. And exactly. You already mentioned that you talk to students about getting a skill certificate or some other, something along the way. Have you looked at anyone who would qualify for the reverse degree as you talked about? Like they qualify for it, so you can award that?
We do that automatically.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, we work with admissions and records in our in section 5 of the program review template to figure that out as well.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Well done.
Great questions. Thank you, Vice Chair Downs. Any other questions for Western Nevada College? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, and nice report. But my question really is to Regent Downs, because he is on faculty there. And have you seen the benefit? You asked questions, but are you seeing this process and its benefit, too, in the mathematics department?
Well, we don't. We used to have, and I actually did the last program review for math, I want to say decades ago, but it was a while ago. And but we switched at some point to have the focus on the AAAS. And the AAS is, and now we're starting to get some more specialized degrees.
Okay.
But we don't have this, we don't have the degree in specifically math anymore. So now we do the broader program reviews. Now that's different than this because we have some specialized in these other areas.
Okay.
So either of you, can you either Dr. Ryan or Professor Galeri, can you state, how many different degrees do we have now at the college? I know at one point we scaled back down to, I think it was 3, because if you didn't have a certain performance on your degrees, then that was flagged. And so, you know, we decided to focus on the main ones. So do either of you have any idea now what it is?
Amy can answer that question.
We have 3 liberal arts degrees, the AA, the AS, and the AGS, and those are all up for review next year. So, Regent Downs, you will be getting an email from me in the spring about this process.
Okay, thank you.
I'm glad I brought it up. He has advance notice. Thank you, Amy.
You're welcome.
Well done, both of you all. Very well done.
And thank you,
Amy,
very much.
Thank you for putting Vice Chair Downs' notification of spring of next year. We do appreciate that. Are there any questions for Western Nevada College? I think other than us just expressing our great appreciation for the work and the presentation, both for Nevada State University and for Western Nevada College, great job, both of you all. Thank you very much. Thank you, Amy. All right, and that was for an information-only item. But we are going to be transitioning over to a possible action item, which is going to be agenda item number 8. Which is the 2025 NSHE Science and Technology Plan. And representatives from the NC Research Affairs Council will request approval of the 2025 NSHE Science and Technology Plan. And we have one up on the microphone right now. Please introduce yourself.
For the record, I'm Fred Harris. I'm the Nevada State EPSCoR Director, and I report to the Research Affairs Council, so I've been working with them diligently on this process. The NSHE Science and Technology Plan is usually brought forward to the regents every few years. We brought it forward in 2020, so I want to back up and talk about what's changed and what the process was. So this is a modification of our 2020 plan. It was developed with the Research Affairs Council, and we brought in all the CIOs from the research institutions across the system, and we met with many stakeholders across the state to be able to discuss this and make changes to it and updates. So from the NSHE point of view, this is a foundation for allowing the different members of the system to be able to integrate together, coordinating research and education and workforce development efforts statewide. We're seeing this in the IT side of things with regards to proposals that are coming together from the CIOs, and we're seeing some of the different things that are being targeted with regards to some of the research projects across the state. From the National Science Foundation, this is required as one of the pieces for our research infrastructure improvement grants. We have currently a $20 million grant dealing with wildfire research in the state, and last week we were able to burn a bunch of stuff up in the north part of the state, so that was good. We were supposed to do it in October, but unfortunately due to the federal government deciding to disappear. We had to wait until they came back into session. So the Bureau of Land Management was the part of our assistance, so we were able to do some of that. But this is required for the proposals for those net grants, and our next round of pieces that will be going out will probably hopefully be this July coming up, so we will see some of those pieces. We have to have this one updated in time for that. It's also used for the NASA projects. The faculty that are proposing things in NASA need to talk about how they are tying things to the state science technology plan. So that way we are targeting things that we can build infrastructure with in our state as opposed to running off individually and doing things that don't help each other. So that's our important pieces of it. You'll see the structure of the proposal as you walk through it. Most of you weren't here when I presented last time, so I'm trying to give you an overview of how it fits. You have some major research topics. We have some paragraphs on why it's important to Nevada. Then we list what the current state of the research is in Nevada. And then we have some research focus areas that are underneath that. We give an introduction with a few sentences, and then we give some strengths and assets, 2 to 4 items, and, you know, bullet line each. And then we have some goals with talking about our additional focus, what we need to be working on over the next few years. We then end, after the research topics, with a section on strategies for success. And this is where we tie things together and talk about the fact that if we're going to be doing things right for our science technology fields, these are things that we need to be pulling together to be able to do it. So that's the overall structure of this plan. Changes. There were minor edits throughout the document, but I want to highlight some of the major ones just so you get a clue for it as to what's changed in the last 5 years. In the land and natural resources section, we had a lot of discussion on what we wanted to change and that came up across. And the biggest thing was a new research focus area on clean energy technologies. This is a piece that has come across on all the 3 major research campuses, and we're seeing it across the state as a major part. There are things that fit under here under lithium and battery technologies. There are things that fit under nuclear research. So we have a lot of pieces that fit under the clean energy technologies that were across the state. In the digital technology section, this one was headed up and spearheaded by the CIOs. All the research focus areas were updated because things in the technology field have changed drastically over the last 5 years, as we all know. So the strengths and assets were updated. The goals and additional focus that were needed have been updated. And the data management research focus was overhauled completely. If we're going to deal with data in our state, there's going to be a lot of different things we've got to talk about and how that works together. In the strategies for success, this is the part that ties things together. The cyber infrastructure section that was in there from the previous one was basically gutted and overhauled and renamed into a collaborative technology ecosystem. As we all understand, we've got to have this ecosystem to be able to put data into it, to be able to deal with sciences, and be able to pull data out across the system. This can't just be a one-box thing. It's got to be where people can work together. So the CIOs, their deputy directors for research, all work together on where we need to be with regards to our cyber infrastructure in our state. I wanted to update the pictures because the last round we did not acknowledge who the pictures were from. So there are a lot of pictures that are at the end. There's a picture in each section that heads it off, and most of them were taken by Scotty Strachan, and I wanted to acknowledge him on that part. And with that, I have given the Blitz update. Any questions you'd like to ask?
Vice Chair Downs.
Thank you, Chair Escada. So I realize, I mean, your technology has obviously evolved exponentially in the last couple of years. So I'm curious in upgrading, do you incorporate AI into your technology?
There is a section on AI that's buried in there too.
Okay.
We are not trying to say we're going to be an AI state, but there's pieces that we've got to be working on in that part, yes.
I didn't know if you incorporated any existing AI functions or machine tools that already exist into analyzing the data you need.
This is more focusing on where we want to focus our research side of it, if I want to put it that way. So there's a section under the digital technologies major chunk that says AI, ML, and analytics. Okay. How are we going to use our AI and machine learning and analyze stuff? This is an important one. I'm going to go back to the FIRE project since I'm also in charge of that one, where we're pulling video feeds of Sagebrush ecosystems, and we're able to identify what type of sagebrush, what type of cheatgrass, and all the different things are there just from video feeds. And then while the drones are flying during a burn, hanging off different cameras to be able to do thermal imaging, being able to identify how hot the fire is so we can tell how crunchy the soil will be afterwards.
Okay. Thank you.
So, yes, they're all part of that piece, yes.
Thank you.
Great technology. Regent Brown.
Thank you, Regent Brown, for the record. I have a question about how we expand and grow the research footprint. Obviously, we have three institutions that are baselined in this. Would a system-wide tech transfer program be beneficial from your perspective in attracting better talent, more talent, different talent?
In the common strategies for success section at the end of this report, there's a section on technology transfer that I think, if you look at those five major pieces, the collaborative technology ecosystem, workforce development, tech transfer, communication and outreach, and then convergence research, science with society. Those are pieces that I think if we're going to have major proposals across the state, we have to have people that understand those pieces and how they would fit, because that's how we tie in some of the other institutions. For the NSF project, I'm pulling back on that one. We're pulling people from campuses in the community colleges for Nevada State. Our goal is to do this integration piece.
I would love to see more of an emphasis. So I'll just share that when I first got on the board, I had mentioned I wanted to do this, and I had spoken with then Chancellor Urquiaga and then Chancellor Charlton. Chancellor McNair now actually has built a commercialization project before. And so I feel very confident, and the folks on this list, and then including Zach, are very involved in this process. But I think it's also just important to hear it from your perspective and to add, like, this isn't just something that would potentially bring money into the system. It's about growing the research capabilities in the long run, which helps bring in additional grant dollars, which then the commercialization, that's kind of the cherry on top, right? Make a couple mil here, you know, everybody loves a little extra money, but it's the value of the research. It's the expanding that piece of who we are as a state, right? We have 8 institutions. When you look at other states, they have 30, 40 institutions, right? But if the quality of what we are producing it is compatible, I think a tech transfer program can help us grow that. So
yes, our previous 5-year project dealt with solar research in the state, which is a major impact for the state. We had a lot of tech transfer that came out of that. We do bring in collaborative researchers from industry. So yes, I expect that kind of pieces. That's one of the reasons I think the leadership has to understand those last parts, which include the tech transfer.
Yeah, I totally agree. Thank you. I've been saying it. I've been trying to do it, but there's no real avenue. And when we have our discussion about committees, you'll hear me talk about it again, because I do think that when we look at workforce, it should expand and have that research component into it, because it is part of that. It is part of growing that footprint, which gets more students into that space, which helps with, you know, grad students and everything. So
yes, yes.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Good questions, Regent Brown. Somewhat segueing off of what Regent Brown was saying, what I was going to ask also, on the bottom of page 7 of the report, it says, and it identifies, of course, NSHE has 3 research institutions, DRI, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, University of Nevada, Reno, and one emerging research institution, Nevada State University. Can you expand on that and the infusement of research opportunities at NSU?
The emerging research institution is the phrase that's used by the federal government. It's based upon how many dollars that they've had with regards to their funding. We're trying to use the same phrases that we have to use in reports there. They are growing rapidly at NSU. I have some ideas of things that we can do after I kickstart some of the next proposals. So I've already talked to some people there, and one of their fields when we have mentoring and leadership workshops that are sponsored by some of the projects we do. And we brought in faculty from different campuses. And last time we were here in Vegas, we got to be able to talk with them on that.
Interesting. Thank you. Any more questions? Fantastic. Thank you very much. And this was an action item, as it was
a request for update and vote, yes.
I would like to make a motion to approve the 2025 NG Science and Technology Plan.
I'll second that. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Regent Brown. Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Very well done. So we're finishing up this meeting with some new business. We have any new business that would like to be discussed. We're going to go to Regent Vice Chair Downs, please.
Thank you, Chair Arascata. So I might be cut short on what I want to say here. So I can cut to the idea, but I also want to give some justification behind this. I had a conversation recently in the last semester about some financial education that most students don't get at higher education. And we found out talking to Assistant Vice Chancellor, Associate Vice Chancellor Davis, that UNLV does offer, I think it's Finance 111, 112, and how nice it would be if that was something all students had an option to take. And so the conversation grew further, and I'm going to make a proposal or an item I'd like to see come back, and I don't want to get attacked by any of the academic officers when I make this one. So please, we want to have the discussion. So my suggestion is a common GE requirement throughout the state for all institutions. Now, a lot of the courses are going to be the same course. We have common course numbering. But it'd be nice if students could go from one school to the other without having to make too big of changes. So that I know that each institution has their own transfer agreements. But if there is a common GE, you know, already, you know, you have your English 101 is going to be across the board. But there might be other specialty courses that are some that fulfill certain requirements. So if we could have a common GE, then students at any school could fulfill what they're going to fulfill and transfer between, even going between UNLV and UNR or CSN to NSU, just to have that the commonality. So I'd like to see it come back that we can look at a common GE statewide since we're one system. So thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Downs. And as reading the room as I was doing right then, you were getting a lot of looks. A lot of stares shooting your way. Very well stated. Is there anyone else with? Yes, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Arascata. So when I first came on the board, we set a policy. It's under Title 4, Chapter 14, Section 23, Item Number 2, that for each degree-seeking institution, the student-to-advisor ratio be set at 350-1. And we've gone all over the board on that. I'd like a report to not only to ARSA, it really should come to the full board because we have so many new members. But I think that's a really important a goal that the board had set, and I'd like to know where we are. So that's my first item. My second item, and I bring this up because there are so many changes, not only in the Regents, we've got a lot of new people, but, you know, certainly with faculty and staff, but and I didn't write this as well, but this was Section 30 on the Community College Institutional Advisory Councils. It says in there that we're supposed to receive the minutes of the IAC meetings, the Institutional Advisory Council meetings, and these are for community colleges. And I can't remember the last time we received those, so I just would, I don't know if that's new business, but we certainly need to receive those. And we are also supposed to receive a report biennially from the institution president, and I don't know when we've received that. And here's what happens. We have tried to shorten the meeting. We used to have the community, all the presidents give a report in the meeting, and we've gotten away from that. And when we do that, we get away from some of the stuff because they were saying that we're getting it in writing. But I know for sure we are not getting these reports, so I'd like to bring that back up. Thank you. That's all I got.
That is a great point. And I'm not one to necessarily focus on the time or the time crunch. What we need to do in this committee and with this committee, we'll do it. Time is not of the essence with me. We'll stay here and get it done with what we need to get done. Regent DeCarlo, that was very well done. I really appreciate it. there any other new business items from the dais? None heard? We're going to move on to agenda item number 10. Agenda item number 10, is there any public comment here at UNLV? Seeing none. SCS, is there any public comment on the phone?
There are no callers for public comment at this time.
Fantastic. This meeting of Academic Research and Student Affairs is going to be 10:44. Thank you much. Appreciate it. See you in the next meeting. We are adjourned.